This is Radio Superior 1955. A reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s.
Come, let's stroll, stroll across the floor.
This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Now turn around, baby. Let's go once more.
Hey, gather around, guys, dolls, cats, and kittens. Tim Michaels here. It's Tuesday, April 12th, 1955. Lou Martin's got the stories. We've got sports with new guy, Cal Sabatini. And the old guys, the Colonel and Joe, are in about an unannounced emergency drill. Wonder when that'll be.
It's unannounced.
I know, but when? Lou's 6 o'clock news, which we know is at 6 o'clock, is sponsored by Lignil Rexall Drug, which has a 1 cent sale. Buy a bottle of aspirin for 54 cents, get another bottle for a penny. All right, Lou, what's buzzing, cousin?
Good evening, Tim, and good listeners. The Salk polio vaccine is labeled a success. The Supreme Court hears desegregation arguments, and the Twin Ports shipping season opens. We begin our evening report from Michigan.
This is Alton L. Blakesley in Ann Arbor. The Salk polio vaccine is safe, effective, and potent. The vaccine was found 80 to 90% effective in preventing paralytic polio in tests last year. Anxious parents were told the news today by Dr. Thomas Francis of the University of Michigan. Jonas Salk of the University of Pittsburgh is sure the vaccine is potentially almost 100% effective and can triumph over polio and its lieutenant of terror and tragedy. Dr. Francis' official report declares the vaccine has an extremely successful effect on children with bulbar polio, the most dangerous type. There is no doubt that children can now be vaccinated successfully to end polio. The vaccine is incredibly safe, with only 0.4 of 1% of children suffering minor reactions. Major reactions were almost completely lacking. Paralysis occurred in 33 children who received the vaccine in areas where children were given either the real drug or dummy shots. None died. Just one child given the vaccine died of polio, and this death followed removal of tonsils 2 days after his second inoculation in an area where polio was already prevalent. Out of 1.8 million children in the test program, only 863 got polio. The 1.8 million children included every child in the program, those inoculated with the Salk vaccine, those given dummy shots, and those just observed. 4 children who received dummy shots died of polio, as against none of those vaccinated. In areas where it was known that children received vaccine, not one died, while there were 11 deaths among children who were being merely observed. Licensing of the vaccine by the National Institute of Health is expected within 48 hours to begin a huge national vaccination program. It is estimated there will be enough for 30 million children, but if Dr. Salk's recommendation of 2 shots instead of 3 is followed, this would make possible inoculation of 45 million children. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, this is Alton L. Blakesley.
This is Washington, Jack Bell, Associated Press. Arguments before the Supreme Court on how and when to wipe out racial segregation in public schools moved briskly today, with attention focused on Virginia and South Carolina. Those two states want time and freedom to integrate in their own way. But attorneys for Negro children want the high court to order color lines eliminated by the start of school next fall, certainly not later than September 1956. In Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka last May, the Supreme Court ruled unanimously it was unconstitutional for the state to maintain separate schools for whites and Negroes, but it put off deciding how and when unified school systems should be achieved. The case involved 8-year-old Negro Linda Brown, who was denied access to an all-white school near her home. Some deep South states, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina, say they will keep their separate schools regardless of what the Supreme Court does. Virginia has told the court that prolonged social disorder will result if desegregation is pushed too rapidly. The attorney for Negro parents in Virginia and South Carolina, Spotswood W. Robinson III, suggests possible contempt proceedings or civil action. In arguing that the High Court should order desegregation forthwith, Mr. Robinson says he is unable to find any case in which the Supreme Court had found a constitutional right was violated and then delayed in effectuating that right because of local hostility or custom. In Washington, this is Jack Bell.
This is Castoria Greece calling, William L. Ryan, AP foreign correspondent. Perhaps we would like some caramels, said the Romanian communist teacher. The Greek children, sitting on a blanket in a courtyard of a school in Bucharest, chorused eager assent. All right, said the teacher, why don't you try praying to God for your caramels? The children prayed to God, nothing happened. Now, said the teacher, we shall pray to Lenin for caramels. The teacher did, and as if by magic, caramels showered on them from the windows of the school. That was the beginning of communist indoctrination for this group of children, newly abducted from their homeland during the Greek Civil War of 1948. Athena Karamis, now 17, arrived back in her native Greece last December. Quoting her, I remember when Stalin died, all the children in my class were lined up and ordered to cry, unquote. She went on pouring out the story of how children were taught to ridicule any of their number who believed in God. The children were told America was a place of slaves, where the workers were beaten. They were told if they went back to Greece, they would be beaten and tortured by the monarchical fascists in the pay of the Americans. As children learned to use modern tools and work at modern jobs, they were subjected to endless political enlightenment tied in with the idea that only in a communist country could they hope to achieve a full life. In many cases, this indoctrination was effective. In Castoria, Greece, this is William L. Ryan.
With the Washington merry-go-round, this is Drew Pearson. A lot of things have happened since that day 10 years ago, April 12, 1945, when FDR passed away. It was a day full of hope and sunshine. A great war was about to be won. Everyone could feel it. Peace was just around the corner. And then his body came home, came back on a flag-draped caisson slowly down Pennsylvania Avenue, up which he had driven four times to take the oath as president. The town seemed empty after that. Actually, FDR hadn't been around much that winter. He was in Warm Springs after his election, in Hyde Park for Christmas, then Yalta, then back to Hyde Park, then to Warm Springs again, then back to Washington to lie in the East Room of the White House. Harry Truman took the oath of office as President of the United States. The cabinet stood by shocked and shaken. Labor Secretary Miss Frances Perkins, who had known FDR since their early reform days in Albany, broke down and wept. Henry Stimson, a Republican who had served in three cabinets and who once had battles against young FDR in New York State, also wept unabashed. So times have changed. The man who succeeded Roosevelt is out of office. The man whom Roosevelt made commanding general in Europe is in office. And when the Yalta records were released, few people whom he had befriended, few he promoted to high office, rose to defend his good name. In contrast, Winston Churchill, who was more to blame for the mistakes at Yalta, retired last week in a blaze of glory. He lived to defend himself. Some years ago, before he came back as prime minister, Churchill confided to a friend that he wished he had passed on, as Roosevelt did, at the height of victory, at the glorious climax of the war. However, he lived to enjoy other glories, and I, for one, am glad he did. In Washington, this is Drew Pearson.
The Eisenhower administration is considering asking the United Nations General Assembly to pass a resolution against the use of force in the Formosa Strait. Adlai Stevenson proposed in a national radio broadcast last night that this country submit a resolution condemning attempt to alter Formosa by force. The 1952 Democratic presidential nominee also urged efforts in the Assembly to seek a formula for a permanent future of Formosa. The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People has a new executive director. Roy Wilkins has been named to replace Walter White, who died last month. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Michaels has this message from Lignell Rexall Drug.
Lignell Rexall Drug has got a big 1 cent sale going on, and it's going on April 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th. That's Wednesday through Saturday. Now, due to the special low prices offered during the sale, all transactions must be strictly cash. No gold bond stamps given on 1 cent sale items. Now, listen to this. Stock up on Rexall Aspirin, 2 for $0.55. Rexall M131. It's a multi-purpose antiseptic and mouthwash, 2 for $0.80. Rexall Clenso toothbrushes, 2 for $0.40. Adrian All-Purpose Cream. It cleans, fabricates, helps you keep a nice, smooth complexion, ideal for powder base, 2 for $1.01. And for cooler, cleaner shaves, how about Lavender Mentholated Shave Cream, 2 for $0.60. That's all going on during the big 1 cent sale, now through Saturday at Lignell Rexall Drug, 1022 Tower Avenue, Superior. Lou?
Because of today's news of the Salk vaccine approval, Superior's polio program will change. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the story.
Major changes of the city's plan for inoculation of first and second graders are foreseen, stemming from Dr. Jonas Salk's recommendation that only 2 shots are needed. City Health Commissioner Dr. E.G. Stack says that the city has been awaiting a report on the effectiveness of the Salk vaccine. Dr. Stack says that the program was to begin next week with the city's 1,700 first and second graders to receive their first 3 shots. Now, a third shot isn't needed. 90% of first and second graders have returned parental consent agreements to their schools. It's expected that with the approval of the vaccine, most of the other parents will okay vaccinations for their children. Although the dates aren't known yet, centers will be set up at Bryant, Cooper, Nelson Dewey, Franklin, Erickson, Pattison, Blaine, and Cathedral grade schools. Volunteering with Dr. Stack to administer the polio vaccine are a battery of a dozen city doctors, Lou.
The Twin Ports shipping season is gearing up to open later this week. Rich Kramer has the story.
The first scoop of iron ore from the Mesabi Range mine was loaded this afternoon into the first ore train bound for Superior. 14,000 tons will be loaded into the steamship L.E. Block at the Great Northern Docks in Eloise Friday. The Inland Steel Company vessel is set to leave its winter berth at Indiana Harbor, Indiana this afternoon for Superior. One day behind that laker will be the P.T. Block, which will be followed by the huge steamer Wilfred Sykes. The Great Lakes fleet this season will fly the flags of Norway, France, Britain, Germany, the Netherlands, Sweden, and Finland, as well as the United States and Canada. The Big Ditch, the St. Lawrence Seaway that is to be opened in 4 years, is the factor bringing new foreign lines to North America's inland waters. Lou?
Thanks, Rich. City Clerk Ari McKegg says that 78% of eligible voters in Superior cast ballots in the April 6th election, the second highest vote since 1943. Finally, although the Superior Blues baseball opener is not set for Municipal Stadium until May the 6th, eager youngsters have inaugurated the season by breaking their way into the stadium. City Park Director Joseph Lozinski says that people have gained access to the park by knocking out a few boards in the fence. Nothing's been stolen, although it has required repairs to patch up the damage done to the fence. Another sign that baseball will soon be here is the new peepholes that have been cut in the fence in the center field section. You're a member of the knothole gang, aren't you, Tim?
Yeah, that Lozinski is a wet rag, patching up perfectly good knotholes. Okay, kiddies, guys, dolls, cats, and kits, here's the buzz on the mercury for this Tuesday, April 12, 1955. Rain tonight and tomorrow, high 46, not hot degrees. Let's take the napper off and roll some hot wax. Here's Bill Haley and the Comets rocking around the old clock on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock. 12 o'clock rock, we're gonna rock around 10 o'clock tonight. Put your slap right, so join me home. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. When the clock strikes 2, 3, and 4, if the band goes down, we'll yell for more. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock. We'll be right back.
7. We'll be right at 7. And we're going to rock around the clock tonight. We're going to rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Well, it's 8, 9, 10, 11, 2. I'll be going strong and so are you. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. We're going to rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're going to rock.
Mercy, somebody stop my legs. They are jitterbugging. From Decca Records, Bill Haley in the comments with a Super Murgatroyd hit from 1954. It didn't become Super Murgatroyd until it opened the movie Blackboard Jungle this year. Before that, it was just Murgatroyd. Time to pay the bills there, cats. There's always a good time to be had at Tony's Cabaret in Superior's North End. Superior's own version of Louis Armstrong, Frankie Cox and his band, gives the great dance floor there plenty to swing about. Tony's Cabaret with Frankie Cox in Superior's North End. The annual home show starts tomorrow through Sunday at the Duluth Armory. Doors open at 1 o'clock. 1 mile of exhibits for your home, even a cooking school with prizes. Lou's up for the Best Boil Water Award. And in person, it's the Mills Brothers with shows at 3:45, 7:15, and 10:15. Check out the home show at the Duluth Armory. Okay, cats, I'm slapping on a hot plate right now. The moon glows, and sincerely, I'm the Tim Michaels Dance Party. Oh, say you're mine. they're off key. From the checkered label, the 1954 doo-wop hit Sincerely by the Moonglows, number one on last year's R&B charts. Oh, I am Crankcast, who introduced the new sports guy, direct from the hockey rink to the airwaves, the man unfazed by a zillion pucks to his unhelmeted head, Duluth State College retired hockey star Cal Sabatini. Hey, be still, my beating heart. You're not Cal Sabatini.
Oh, he asked me to pinch hit, Timmy. Apparently, he's covering the Douglas County Milk Producers versus the Boy Scout Den 35 Horseshoe Contest. We know that bitter rivalry must be covered. Cal smelled a scoop.
Milk producers must hate smell and scoop jokes. So, you're a ringer, huh?
Bill Kirby, at your service. Let's face off, fans. About 45,000 rooters from all parts of Wisconsin will watch the Milwaukee Braves open their third National League season at County Stadium against the Cincinnati Redlegs. Interest in the Braves is heightened, if that's possible, by the feeling the Braves have a good chance to go all the way to bring the World Series to Wisconsin. That's the opinion of a good many sports writers and major league managers. Braves manager Charlie Grimm says, we're as ready as we can be. Governor Walter Kohler will be on hand to toss out the first ball and put the 1955 show on the road. Veteran southpaw Warren Spahn is ticketed to start on the mound for the Braves. He has 31 wins, 8 losses against Cincy. Washington Senators manager Charlie Dressen is right back where he was when he left off, in first place. He's in a new league and a new town, but the peppery little guy who quit as manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1953 after leading them to two successive pennants is still riding high. After his first game, he and his Senators find themselves on top by virtue of yesterday's 12-5 opening day victory over Baltimore. In Washington, a pair of veteran right-handers, President Dwight D. Eisenhower and Bob Porterfield, combined their talents to throttle the Orioles with 6 hits. Ike jinxed Washington's opposition for the second straight year, tossing out the first ball. All 16 clubs swing into action today. Kansas City makes its American League debut at the refurbished Municipal Stadium against Detroit. Connie Mack, a household name with baseball folk for more than half a century, is scheduled to hand the ball to former President Harry Truman, who in turn will deliver his 9th opening day pitch. The 92-year-old Mack flew in with the Kansas City A's yesterday from their exhibition windup and smiled throughout an hour-long parade that attracted almost 200,000 well-wishers. City kegglers seem to be waxing stronger as the bowling season draws rapidly to a close. Honor counts were rolled in the ladies' major leagues in their last outings, including the 1955 City High 3-game series for women. City champ Thelma Nelson, last month's leading gal kegler, posted a 6-11 series for the year's women's high mark. Thelma rolled games of 235, 180, and 196 for the total. Northern Beer retained a thin half-game grip on first place by stopping Schlitz Beer. Peter's Jewelry dropped Fleming's Bar twice. O&L Appliance won 2 from Siegel Brothers. And Lurie Furniture whipped Jardine's twice.
Sweet job, man. Man, glad you could cover for Cool Cal, baby.
Glad to be here. We'll miss Rapid Ray, but he got his big break going to TV.
All right, guys, dolls, cats, and kittens. From the cream of the crop, from the top of the pots, from the stack at the back of the wax, the Platters and the Great Pretender on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Oh, yeah, I'm the Great Pretender. Can tell. Oh, yeah, I'm the great pretender. A prince in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to grieve all alone. Conceal. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Just laughing and gay like a clown. I seem to be what I'm not. You see, I'm wearing my heart like a crown. Still around. To real is the feeling of make-believe. To real when I feel what my heart can't conceal. Yes, I'm the great pretender.
tender. Just laughing and gay like the clown. I seem to be what I'm not. You see, I'm wearing my heart like a crown, pretending that you're still.
A brand new hit by the Platters and the Great Pretender. Tony Williams, Waylon Leed, lyrics and music by one of the best names I've ever heard, Buck Ram. I think I spilled some of that on me one time.
Well, if I were ever to stoop so low as to become a disc jockey, I'd use the name Buck Ram. That's better than the two first names so many of your kind use. I mean, Tom Patrick, Patrick Thomas, Gary Neal, Bill Bobby. Billy Bob. I mean, it sounds fake.
You mean like Lou Martin and Tim Michaels?
Well, yeah. I mean, no offense.
Station engineers are too square to get me to snap my cap, baby.
Speak American, man.
Station engineer Joe Gardonio and Douglas County Civil Defense Director Joe Buster Raffley.
That's Buck Ram, Gardonio.
Yeah, that doesn't work. Try Dopey instead.
Oh, yeah? Buster?
In fact, you can try any of the nine dwarfs' names. They'd all fit.
There's seven of them, and... Oh, yeah?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Don't be
Well, let me tell you one thing
here.
Curly,
or whichever one of them. Whatever one.
Are they here for any particular reason?
Droopy.
Yes, they're in charge of the National Guard. Emergency notification drill.
That's right. That's right. Hold on.
Buck Ram.
That's right. Me and Buck Ram here. Yes.
You know, now that you mention it, it does sound kind of dumb when you say it.
A lot of things sound dumb when I say it. Now, listen up, people. The drill is called Operation Minuteman. It's the colonel's job to get men of the HQ and heavy mortared 128th Infantry Regiment of the Wisconsin National Guard notified and ready to repel a sudden commie attack on the United States. Joe?
The drill is a national alert. It will take place at an undesignated time, with no warning. It is designed to ascertain our ability to muster the National Guard in as fast a time as is humanly feasible. Raffy?
I'll be working with superior commanders Roy Martinson and Ray Dodge. We're part of a 400,000 National Guardsmen around the good old U.S. of A. to keep our women, children, well, and even Democrats safe from the expected Soviet onslaught. Joe?
Yep. Because of my engineer prowess and experience, I've been enlisted by local guard radio communications Chief Master Sergeant Laverne Leisdahl. It is our job to receive and send word of said Operation Minuteman reconnoiter. A state radio network has been set up just for this purpose. Raffy?
The exact date and time of these exercises is secret. So, men, sleep with your boots on and make us proud.
Won't that make the wife mad if you sleep with your boots on?
Sleeping in pink footy pajamas might be embarrassing, too. They might show through the uniform.
Well, every man should be sleeping in his birthday suit. That's all.
That would make most wives happier.
Not mine.
You'd hope so, anyway.
For the Colonel and Buck Gardonio, here are the Charms and Hearts of Stone on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Made of stone,
why do?
Will never break me for the love you have for them.
Why
it's just the one day you can ask to please.
Please
break.
Why
and all your love is there.
Love
them,
why?
They'll stop you just saying,
why?
us here, the East Coast R&B group, The Charms, and Hearts of Stone on Kickin' KUWS.
What's this doo-doo wop-wop music you're playing? It's turning perfectly good teenagers into pimply face punk.
Hey, this music is to the end, baby. It's to the crazy cats.
Yeah, it drives more than cats crazy. It drives me buggy.
The Colonel needs to get away from it, eh, Joe?
And I've got just the thing. No rock and roll. No jive talk. No poodle skirts.
The dog skirts, they're kind of cute, but the language these kids use today is scary, and it's got to be. I'm a firm believer. It's part of some commie plot.
I've got a solution. It's perfect. Volunteer to live in a civil defense bomb shelter. You get free, albeit old and tasteless, food, all the stale water you can drink, and no annoying radio shows by people with two first names.
No annoying birds chirping or kids playing.
Yeah.
You can sleep wherever you wanted because there wouldn't be any of that annoying sunshine in the shelter.
Sounds like a dream vacation. A good old American-made civil defense bomb shelter. I could be safe when the Ruskies drop their nuclear cookies from their bombers.
That's kind of correct. It'd be Uncle Sam that would be dropping nuclear bombs on you.
Why on God's scorched, radiated earth would Uncle Sam bomb me? Especially with a Republican president in office. Now, Truman might do that, but not Ike.
The idea is that on April 26th, they'll set off a hydrogen bomb at the Nevada Proving Grounds. They've got a below-ground civil defense bomb shelter with dummies inside.
You mean you and McMichaels are going to be there, too?
No, we are not. Those are mannequins. They're made in Mannequinapolis, Indiana.
So they're looking for a guinea pig, huh? April 26th. Let me see. Do something for God and country. Risk being baked like a potato.
Probably be reduced to radiated ashes, more like it.
Wait. April 26th is a Tuesday. Can't do it. There's an executive committee meeting of the
blacklisting committee of the No Commies Commission.
That's it, McLewis. Otherwise, I'm there.
Maybe next time, Colonel.
Yeah. Next time. Maybe there's a waiting list I can get on or something, all right?
Time to put an end to this madness there, Cast. But join us.
Too much rock and
roll. Too much rock and roll.
Turns your brain into pus. I've seen it happen 1,000 times before.
Time to put an end to this there, Cast. But join us mornings on KUWS with the Early Riser Show at 6 with news and tips for the home. And then, at 9 o'clock, Norman Vincent Peale, followed by Chapel of the Year. We'll be back same time, same hardwood dance floor, the good Lord willing, and we're not bomb shelter mannequins. For Lou Martin, Cool Cal, Joe and the Colonel, this is Tim Michaels, rocking and rolling your world, baby.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1955, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Tom Martinson, Don Hansen, John Munson, Rich Kramer, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1955 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.